Did you know that when Europeans first came to North America, there were about 400 million, that's right, 400 million American beavers around our continent? By 1900, thanks to the fur trapping industry, that population was down to about 100,000. And as beavers disappeared, the landscape of North America changed dramatically, and arguably for the worse. Ben Goldfarb tracks the environmental impact that beavers have on the world around them, as well as their unique history, in his new book, Eager: The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. He joins us to tell us about why he became a self-proclaimed beaver believer. He started by telling us why beavers are so important for the ecosystems that they're in.
Of course, the fundamental beaver behavior, the thing we all know, is they build dams, right? And those dams store huge amounts of water. They create ponds and wetlands. And historically, that's what many, many streams on this continent looked like. You know, it was just a series of beaver ponds, kind of the crystalline, clear, free-flowing, narrow, shallow stream that we think of today, kind of the prototypical babbling brook, you know, really wasn't the rule in many places. You know, streams were much messier, filled with dead wood and decaying organic matter and silt. You know, instead of free-flowing streams, we had these chains of ponds and wetlands in many places. And that was really the handiwork of beavers. They created an entirely different ecosystem than the one that we're accustomed to today when their populations are much reduced.
Talk about the history of beavers in New England and how they shaped the landscape that we have around here.
Yeah, so New England was sort of the place where the fur trade began. You know, the first European colonists arrived here, and beavers were integral first to their economies. The Pilgrims, the first colonists, owed money to their creditors back in Europe. And, you know, one of the few ways they could repay those debts was by shipping beaver pelts back to the Old World. So beavers, you know, really made the Massachusetts Bay Colony and the Plymouth Colony possible. As those beavers got trapped out, their dams were no longer maintained, and the dams began to break down, and all of these ponds started draining out to the ocean. And what was left behind was this rich layer of organic matter, these nice, flat, treeless, incredibly fertile footprints left behind by these derelict beaver ponds that had gone dry. And that was really some of the best farmland in the New World. That was incredibly rich, fertile soil in a region that's generally pretty rocky and infertile. So beavers really helped make agriculture possible in the New World.
So we talk about these large numbers, and then they're wiped out almost as many other species have been, very quickly because of human consumption. In the late 18th century, they're almost all gone. How exactly did we bring them back? How did they return?
Yeah, so in the early 1900s, we began to recognize that beavers were actually these hugely important animals. Plus, you know, trappers wanted to hunt them again. You know, they'd lost an important source of pelts and income. So a kind of a series of beaver relocation projects began all over the country. And in New England, you know, where beavers had been trapped out, the primary beaver source was actually the state of New York. In New York, you know, in 1904, the legislature passed this resolution basically calling for beaver reintroduction. The problem then was that, you know, there were really no beavers to find, right? I mean, we're, you know, kind of at the beaver population nadir. It was hard to find a beaver at that point in history. So these New York state biologists went down to St. Louis for the Louisiana Purchase Centennial. It was this big sort of exposition celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the Louisiana Purchase. And down there, they bought 7 live beavers from the Canadian delegation at the Louisiana Purchase Exposition. And they took those beavers back up to New York. They got a few more from Yellowstone, and they relocated about 20 beavers in 1904 and 1905 to the waters of New York. By 1915, just 11 years later, that population had exploded to 15,000 beavers from a seed population of 20 or so, plus a few beavers that were there already. So, you know, later that decade and in the 1920s, you know, those beavers began to disperse out of New York, crossing state lines, entering Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont. And there were a few introductions as well in New England, but, you know, a lot of the beavers we have in the Northeast are descendants of that New York State population.
We've heard stories in recent years about scientists making a stand and saying we have to reintroduce species in various parts of the country in order to balance out the ecosystem. But that seems like a very early attempt at that worked really well.
Yeah, people were pretty beaver aware back then. I think it's one of the interesting things for me as I've researched this book has been seeing, you know, today we recognize beavers as these hugely important ecosystem service providers, right? They store water for us. Their ponds filter out water pollution, improving water quality. You know, they reduce erosion. They slow down floods. They provide all these valuable services. And, you know, people actually knew that back in the early 1900s. There was this beaver awareness that we sort of lost again, I think, over the course of the 20th century. So those biologists were pretty sharp people. They got it.
There are some people that you talk to, leading experts in beaver coexistence, who live right here in New England, Mike Callahan and Skip Lyle. Can you tell us who they are and what they're doing exactly?
So the traditional way that we handle beaver conflicts, you know, when a beaver clogs up a road culvert, let's say, and washes out the road, is we just trap those beavers out. We kill the beavers. And, you know, that can work temporarily, but it has two main problems. One is that you're eliminating a lot of these great ponds and wetlands that the beavers are creating. And the second problem is, you know, you're really just putting up a vacancy sign for the next family of beavers, right? It's as long as the habitat's good, they'll find their way back there. So what Mike and Skip do is they say, you know, let's manage these beaver conflicts in a different way, especially flooding. And their solution to that is this thing called a flow device. In Skip's case, it's called a beaver deceiver. It's basically this pipe and fence system that passes water through the dam and regulates the height of the pond. So you can say, hey, you know, I like having these beavers here. I appreciate all the good they're doing for the ecosystem, but, you know, I don't want to snorkel through my backyard and, you know, have Mike or Skip install one of these flow devices and basically strike a compromise, a water level that's acceptable, ideally, to both rodent and human being.
Okay, so in our region, in New England, roughly speaking, you don't have to have specific numbers of beavers, but how are they doing? Are they back? Are they as big a population as when the colonists first came here and started trapping and killing them?
No, they're not. They're not quite that big, but they're doing pretty well. I mean, the issue now is that, you know, we've developed so much habitat, right? We've drained so many wetlands, we've paved over, you know, so many floodplains and occupied former beaver habitat. You know, there's no way that beavers will ever return to their former abundance in New England. But, you know, their populations are pretty robust in most of the region. You know, certainly Massachusetts, most of Massachusetts is pretty close to biological carrying capacity, I would say. Most of the good habitats are occupied at this point, which is fantastic. You know, I think that New England's a great beaver success story. We have a lot of water here, unlike the West, where beaver populations are still pretty low. So we're closer to full occupancy, but there are still lots of places where beavers, again, are just reflexively trapped out every time they cause a problem. I think that there are opportunities to get beavers back in some streams and wetlands in close proximity to humans. You know, there are ways of addressing these problems and helping beavers out still more in New England.
So you've made such a great case for beavers as balancers of ecosystems and master builders. It's a fascinating species, but I just want you to end on just some cool things about beavers that people don't know. I mean, the stuff that people who really care about these animals will tell people, I don't know, at a bar or something. Did you know this about beavers? Okay, tell us some stuff.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by how well beavers are adapted to this really unique niche they have, right? I mean, they spend, you know, so much of their time in the water. It stands to reason they have some great sort of evolutionary adaptations to living in water. So, for example, they have this second set of transparent eyelids they can close over their eyes that basically act as goggles underwater. They have a second set of fur-lined lips they can close behind their teeth so they can chew and drag branches underwater without getting water down their throats. And, you know, and they also have this really unique diet, right? They're eating the inner bark of trees, which is, you know, some pretty hard stuff to digest. So they end up eating their own poop, basically, to give their guts kind of a second chance at getting every last dollop of nutrients out of their fecal matter. So I think, you know, they've got some pretty cool adaptations to this very unique life they have.
Ben Goldfarb is an environmental journalist. He's the author of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. You can find an excerpt of this book on nextnewengland.org. Ben, as always, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.